This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele, a show that matches business mentees with exceptional mentors to provide the skills and knowledge to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. Beyond Mentorship is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
A very good morning to you and welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Mentorship here at 101.9 High FM as well as 91.9. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm joined, this is a very interesting week that we have just started. I hope you all started quite well. As you join us, we are obviously going to dispense with business insights and wisdom shared by our esteemed business executive and entrepreneurs. It is common cause that South Africa is not doing well in terms of business space, particularly the small businesses. As you all know, that load shedding has contributed significantly to economic recovery. However, we bring you thought leaders and experts in this particular space whose inputs will make significant insights or significant contributions to how you look at the business, as it were. Anyway, before we get into the gist of thought-provoking insights and observations from my esteemed guests, let's dispense with the formalities on that note. I want to thank Michael McKenna for laying the foundation as we continue. Let me thank Craig, who's on the controller, as well as Harry Seleke, who's the producer of the show. Gentlemen, thank you very much for doing sterling work. As we proceed in our conversation, perhaps maybe a precursor that if you have missed any of our previous conversation, not to worry, simply visit our website to download any of the podcasts and share your thoughts with us. Talking of previous conversations, I had a delightful and insightful conversation with Professor Bonang Mahale, who is the chairperson at Bidvest Group as well as the chancellor at the University of the Free State. As expected, he gave us good insights around leadership issues and the extent to which we can reposition ourselves as a country to take advantage of the role of business, as the business is a trusted partner in writing the economy, as it were. Anyway, I implore you to look at that particular chat and download it, give us your sense. As we proceed in tonight's conversation, we have two sessions. The first session is dedicated to very fascinating conversation that I can't wait to start off with with Martin Kingston, who is the former CEO and now the executive chairperson at the Rothschild & Company. In the second half of conversation, I'll be joined by Luyanda Lukolo, who is the MD of Pamela Trading. For that, but we want to hear more about his experience at Gibella Business Incubation. As you know, the show prides itself by aligning or getting more insights on how an entrepreneur's journey has been, particularly when you get mentorship and the kind of support that they are getting. Meanwhile, I urge you to really weigh in on our conversation with Martin. And our SMS line is 34459. Telegram is 061-895-109. And of course, your views and thoughts are most welcome via my Twitter handle, which is Dr. Better. As we proceed, so who's Martin Kingston, if you ask? Well, Martin is a very well-known individual. He's the former, as I've indicated earlier, he's the former CEO and now executive chairperson at the Rothschild & Company. He's also a former vice president at BUSA, which is the apex body representing major companies in this country. He has had over 40 years of experience in the financial and services industry. Martin, as an investment banker, he worked in the UK and South Africa and does about advising entrepreneurs, corporates, government, and SOEs around the world on major transactions and capital raising. So he's a well-rounded individual. In a nutshell, my view is that Martin is an embodiment of business success here at home and abroad. We're therefore privileged to have him in studio giving us insights on the very complex issues that are bedeviling our economy. On that note, Martin, good evening and welcome to Beyond Mentorship.
Well, good evening to you and your listeners, Nimrod. I hope that you can hear me properly.
Loud and clear, my good sir, loud and clear. Thank you very much. As we proceed, Martin, you served at BUSA, which has, as I've indicated earlier, an apex body which represent business across the land and breadth of this country. Personally, the first question would be, what has been your highlights of that particular role? You ever had access to the ministers, access to the president on very pertinent issues? Your highlight as we start off this conversation in your role as the vice president at BUSA.
Yes, well, I think that if you can hear me, and you must tell me if you can't, because the signal is breaking a little bit, Nimrod, and I hope that you can hear me clearly. I can't hear you so clearly. I think it's worthwhile exploring the journey that we've been on since BUSA, and indeed, as you say, when I was a vice president of BUSA and chairman of its economic policy unit. And of course, that coincided with some very significant developments in the country, and most particularly the pandemic. And the pandemic itself was unexpected. I don't believe as a country we were suitably prepared for what was about to happen. But at BUSA, we actually mobilized very significant resources. And they didn't need to be members of BUSA. They didn't need to be members of organized business. In fact, we contrived of the Business for South Africa platform as a collaborative effort between BUSA and the Black Business Council, when we recognized that we needed to bring all of the voices within the business community, large and small, formal and informal, to bear, so that we could create an appropriate response on behalf of the private sector to the pandemic. We could rally real resources, and we could partner not just with government, I have to say, but also with other social partners in making sure that we could put forward a proposition whereby business in its entirety could really demonstrate its not only commitment to the country, but the fact that we could make a real difference in dealing with the challenges, the headwinds of the pandemic, knowing at the time that many countries were struggling with the same challenges. We were developing responses as new information was emerging. But I think in South Africa, it was the only country where we saw business rally in such a very substantial and manifest manner to be able to deal with those issues. And you'll remember, Nimrod, that we formed three areas of response, all with government. The first was, of course, our healthcare pillar. That was to ensure that we could cooperate with not only government but social partners in bringing PPE and other interventions into the country when we had none, working in close collaboration with the Solidarity Fund, which we had established at the same time. The Solidarity Fund, your listeners will remember, raised over 4 billion rand from both individuals as well as institutions, philanthropic organizations domestically and indeed internationally, to make sure that we could be as well equipped as possible. The second was the COVID relief grant. We had another platform working particularly there in the confines of NEDLAC, so that we could properly and effectively provide support as a country to those who were rendered either temporarily or permanently unemployed. And indeed, that's where the 350 rand a month grant had its origins, and that's now carried on and is likely to be with us, whether this is a basic income grant or some other level of support going forward. And the third was the economic intervention platform, and there again there were two purposes. One was to look at different sectors of the economy and how they were impacted by the pandemic and indeed by lockdown, and engaging with the government in particular, but other social partners, on lockdown provisions. And secondly, the authoring of the accelerated economic recovery strategy, a post-COVID recovery strategy. If only, Nimrod, some of the suggestions and interventions that we were proposing as business then had been acted upon, we would find ourselves in a very different set of circumstances, because we're now talking about July of 2020, some 3.5 years ago, and we could have activated some of those structural reforms, if you like, that we had identified. There's nothing controversial about them at the time. But nevertheless, I think it was the first time that business in its entirety as a collective had come together and both participated in the way in which we have spoken about. But secondly, really partnered with government in a very focused manner where we prioritized pretty relentlessly, I must say, the interventions that needed to be taken. And then we ensured that we had best of breed subject matter experts, backed in many cases by the companies and the sectors concerned, to follow through on that activity. And that, of course, was the hallmark of 2020. And then, without going into too much detail, unless you want me to, pivoting in 2021 to create the vaccination program response by business against partnering, again partnering with government, and where we saw an accelerated rollout. We were very slow as a country to get moving, and I think many of us felt deeply saddened at that reality. But absolutely, when we did get moving,
absolutely,
private sector had a role to play.
Yeah. Martin, thank you very much for that insight. I just want to, you know, go back to some of the issues that you've raised, which are of critical importance to the listener as we engage. We're going to have to take a break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. This Nimrod Mbele here. I'm joined by the one and only Martin Kingston, who is the executive chairperson at Rothschild & Company. Before we enter the break, Martin gave us a very interesting overview of the interface between BUSA as well as government. Three pillars that you mentioned earlier on, which suggest in my mind, or in the mind of the listener, there's some momentum on the Tumamina campaign, and which is then a follow-up question based on the kind of activities that you foresaw in your capacity as the vice president of Apex Business Associates in the country. Where is Tumamina? Is it still up and alive? Where are we with that particular mantra?
Yes, so I think that we need to recognize that the country, Nimrod, has been on a trajectory that is of concern to most, if not all of us. And in that context, we can all seek to address those issues individually, but the power of the collective is so much greater. And we know that business historically has been viewed with some level of skepticism as having a self-interested agenda, as having a narrow perspective, rather than one that is patriotically centered around what is in the greater good for the country and indeed for those who are less fortunate than many of us who have the opportunity to have the security of a job or a home or access to the support mechanisms that are necessary. And I believe that what emerged in particular during the pandemic was a heightened social conscience on the part of business. Certainly, it's one that I believe in passionately, where we can pursue the goals that are at the center of business whilst embracing a broader agenda of, as I said, supporting the country and indeed tending to those who need to be assisted so that they can achieve their own potential as individuals, as institutions, as communities concerned. And that became very apparent during the pandemic, which exacerbated and magnified those issues. I'm at a stage in my career where I no longer need to work full time. In fact, I would have to say I'm beyond retirement age, although for some people that is simply sort of a theory, it's a mirage. There is no such thing as retirement. We need to keep on putting our shoulders to the wheel. And so if I fast forward to today, as I said, we identified in 2020 the need for an accelerated economic recovery strategy and to be able to focus on a limited number of interventions that would boost confidence levels, that would attract the support of all constituencies, where we would see business, which is, of course, at the end of the day, the key driver of economic activity and growth, the key contributor towards the fiscus, the key creator of jobs, both in the formal and indeed in the informal sector. And indeed, I would have to say, going forward is going to be and continue to be the biggest contributor to inclusive economic growth. But to do that, we have to sell business individually and collectively a vision. We need government to demonstrate that we're addressing some of the very fundamental headwinds that confront us as a country. And we were very relentless in our engagement in 2022 with government. Government wanted to focus on a broad social compact, and although we engaged substantively with them, and I was part of the team that did that with government, there were between 3 and 5 ministers, and we had several engagements with the president. We didn't want to be distracted from our primary focus, which was to demonstrate that we could actually make real progress in a limited number of areas. Initially, you'll recall, Nimrod, we had 5 areas we were looking at: energy, transport and logistics, water, and other forms of infrastructure, in particular municipal infrastructure, and then the pernicious issue of crime and corruption. But on reflection, that seemed to be too many. We actually needed to narrow the focus. We narrowed the focus to the 3 that are very much in the public domain, that of energy security and being able to eliminate load shedding, ensuring that we have competitive, predictable access to power. The second being transport and logistics. In many respects, that's overtaken energy as the biggest single threat to inclusive economic growth. And the third being a huge societal curse, that of crime and corruption, not just in the public, but in the private sector at a society-wide level. And I would extend that to include maladministration. And for the past 9 months, we've been working hand in glove with the government to remedy these issues, bringing resources and expertise from the private sector to work on very specific interventions. We have meetings with the president every 6 to 8 weeks. In fact, the next one is scheduled for this week, where we take stock of where we are and where we put in place the systems, the structures, the governance and oversight, and indeed we populated it with resources. And we have committed ourselves to accounting, not just to business, not to government, but to the country at large, as to the progress that we are making jointly with government to address these issues. And in my view, that partnership is beginning to bear fruit. It's not without its frustrations, but I think we all recognize that if we don't get some runs on the board and make real and sustainable progress in dealing with these challenges, then such confidence as there is, and I have to say, it is wafer thin, will be broken, will dissipate further, and we won't get the investment that drives the growth that is required. And it is that growth which, of course, will lead to sustainable jobs for all of those, in particular the youth, that need it if they are to see a vision become a reality in terms of harnessing opportunity and achieving their potential.
Look, you raised a very number of pertinent issues that you have sort of narrowed down. I mean, energy security, transport and logistics, and obviously the biggest headache, which is crime and corruption. And to what extent do you think the successes that you have amassed so far are inspiring ordinary folks? Because when you obviously, with in your capacity as business, you have these kinds of interface with government, you have these kind of engagement with the president, as you have currently pointed out that you've got yet another engagement with the president. These issues don't seem to filter down to ordinary folks. I mean, we've heard last week that the national debt hovers around 74%, and it is expected to stabilize around 75% by 2025. That is just a huge, because which means resources that ought to have been put aside for infrastructure, for the same issue that you're talking about, energy security, transport and logistics, are essentially resource intensive. Where would the money come from, and how would you turn around this particular situation to inspire folks that indeed the headwinds that you have been confronted with are somehow dissipating, particularly in the context of the forthcoming national and provincial elections?
Yes, it's a very good question. It's probably the key question, Nimrod, that you asked. So I believe that we haven't done as good a job as we need to in communicating in a consistent manner. And when I say we, I mean government and business, the progress that we're making. And part of that communication is about making sure that we're transparent and that we're honest about where there are challenges, rather than that we try and sugarcoat the pill. And I mention that because, of course, the upcoming elections mean that we're going to have multiple versions of the truth, if I can characterize it as such. And people see through that. They see that the emperor has no clothes, and then trust levels such as they are dissipate. So there is work to be done on making sure that we have, as I said, aligned, consistent, and transparent regular communications. And indeed, we now have a sort of cross-cutting team working within business and government to try and harmonize the messaging. But it's easier said than done, and I fully acknowledge and recognize that in the 3 months leading up to the national elections, there's going to be a lot of noise in the system, and it's almost impossible for the man and the woman on the streets to be able to ensure that they receive reliable information that they can act upon, and they can see with their eyes that there's a real improvement in their circumstances. And in that context, I just need to say that, unfortunately, the damage that has been wrought is so bad that we're not going to see a discernible improvement in circumstances in the immediate short term. And we need to persuade people that if we are very committed and put our shoulder to the wheel, we will see progress going forward. Can you still hear me, Nimrod?
Absolutely. No, we're still listening very attentively, Martin.
Yes. So the second point I wanted to make is, and it sort of builds on the issue of trust, which is the Edelman survey on trust indicated that the least trusted counterparty in South Africa is government, and the most trusted constituency is actually business. And I take no pride in that. I think that it would be much better if government was better trusted than it apparently is. But trust is earned over time and lost very quickly, as we know, and we mustn't squander the benefit of receiving people's faith in the work that we can do. Now, you talk about the resources that need to be committed. Business established the Resource Mobilization Fund, you will recall, last year. I chair it and have done since its inception. It's completely independent from both government and business, but we have representatives who are formerly with government. In fact, the former Director General in the presidency, Dr. Cassius Lubisi, sits on the board and is a hugely valuable contributor to the debates that we have. And the other members of the board, and none of them have affiliations that in any way conflict or compromise their independence. We raised 100 million rand to capacitate technical assistance to NEEC on the National Energy Crisis Committee. We're now in the process of raising over 100 million rand to do the same thing for the National Logistics Crisis Committee. And that's over and above the resources that we're committing for our own participation as business. And indeed, I think we're going to see that being scaled. But to do that, we need to make sure that those who contribute feel that their investment, their commitment is justified, that they see real progress being made, not a return on their investment. Their return is the national return of progress. And once again, we need to manage people's expectations, Nimrod, as to how long it will take to really see traction emerge and then to stay on the straight and narrow. It's easy to say these things, but it's very difficult to keep that momentum going. And that's what we are completely focused on doing in the weeks and months ahead, Nimrod.
Absolutely. As we wrap up this particular conversation, we have noted a number of senior executive appointments, particularly in the state-owned entity sector, because we all know that these are key drivers in any economic development. What sort of confidence, or based on your engagement with the president and cabinet on these particular issues, to what extent business is confident that these CEOs that are appointed in those entities will actually, it's not just a putting a bandage on a massive wound, but it you know, the appointment will address specific issues. I tell you why I'm raising this particular question, because there are a lot of theories as to why SOEs are in a quagmire. And one of the biggest theories that I subscribe to is that of SOEs' business model as completely flawed. And it doesn't matter, you can get the most competent CEO to manage Eskom, but if the business model is flawed, nothing will happen. You get Denel, the same thing. SAA, then the same thing. So to what extent do you think this appointment are just not a bandage on a sore that is quite infectious, which require complete overhaul of the entities that, which they are presiding over?
Yes. So let me answer that. I know that we are nearing the end of the discussion, Nimrod, but we wholeheartedly applaud the appointments that have been announced with respect to both Transnet, so Michelle Phillips is the CEO, and Eskom, Dan Marukane. We need to recognize, we mustn't be naive, that we can't rely upon a single individual in very large, very complex, and very challenged organizations succeeding on their own. They need to have the support and cover of the board. They need to have the endorsement of their shareholder. They need to have a competent, capable team around them and below them. And that's not been the case historically. You'll remember that I sat on the board of SAA and saw many of these issues at first hand. But I think that we raised consistently with the president and with his cabinet colleagues the need to have fit for purpose, highly qualified, competent, credible leaders within these state-owned enterprises. Certainly in the case of Eskom and Transnet, we are confident that our cries for help in that regard have been heard, but we need to widen the scope of their authority. We need to make sure that they're not second-guessed in the process. We need to give them both space to make the very difficult decisions they have to make, and then assistance in executing those decisions. That's the only way we're going to be able to turn around those SOEs. And perhaps the final point I would make is that in all of these discussions, the current and future role of the private sector is, I think, now explicitly acknowledged. It's explicitly acknowledged in the Energy Action Plan, equally so in the Freight and Logistics Roadmap. It's going to take much longer to ensure that there is appropriate levels of private sector participation suitably regulated with great deals of transparency than has been the case to date. But I'm confident and I'm positive, Nimrod, that with the executives that we've talked about, with a fresh approach to partnering between business and the private sector, we will make the progress that we could and should have made to date into the future, and I look forward to discussing that with you when you and I next speak.
Absolutely, that's absolutely beautiful. That level of optimism, because we all need to be optimistic about the outlook of the country. Unfortunately, we're not delivered to Martin. Thank you very much for gracing Beyond Mentorship with your presence.
Thank you so much as well, Nimrod, and your listeners.
Thank you. There we go. That's Martin Kingston, who is the former CEO and now the executive chairperson at Rothschild & Company, giving us very interesting insights based on his personal experience as one of the capable leaders who represented a highly important structure in business, which is BUSA, as well as a number of committees that he chairs, obviously trying to change the perception, change the programming in terms of where the country is going. It has been absolutely beautiful. I think we are good to go, and we'll obviously follow up with Martin based on what are the other developments beyond the kind of engagement that he has already told us that he will be having with the president.